The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we are working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. As the 16th President Abraham Lincoln succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. And once again, I am flying solo. I am Abigail Johnson with Education America. Rebecca Hagstrom, unfortunately, is not able to join us. And I will tell you, listeners, she is going to be so disappointed to not get a chance to chat with our guest. We have Mr. Daniel Buck returning for another episode with us. We are so thankful to him for his time. He is an editorial and policy associate at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He's also the author of What is Wrong with Our Schools? And yes, he is an epic tweeter. So, Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me back on.
So we're going to switch topics just a little bit. We guess we did just chat quite a bit about the importance of actual content before learning how to think critically and the importance of memorization, which did have me making a list of different things that, okay, I need to really buckle down and start working on memorizing things again. I admit it has been a while since I have done that. But we are going to move on and really pick Daniel's brain a little bit about a piece that he wrote called Don't Spare the Rod. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with disciplinary policies in schools and how it's changed over time. Daniel, can you just chat a little bit about what your experience was as a teacher in the classroom with this?
Yeah, so whatever you think of a stereotypical out-of-control school, whatever you've seen in movies, I've seen it all. I have seen bathrooms and toilets ripped off the walls. I have held back students larger than me, had to press them against a wall to keep them from fighting while security guards ran in. I have seen students spit on, hair ripped out, and other things that are not fit to describe on a, public radio station, a radio station in public. Plenty more that I would rather not mention because it's uncomfortable.
Yep.
But that kind of stuff, to some extent, I can handle. At the last school I was at, I was told my room, it was like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde affair where there was chaos elsewhere. And you walk into my room and it'll be silent for 15, 20 straight minutes while kids read or write essays or whisper and, you know, finish their work together, whatever it is. So I can handle the chaos. What troubled me was watching chaos, watching something that was out of my control. You know, a student ran into my room one day. My class was doing their work, hanging out, chilling. Some were done. It was almost the end of the hour. And another student ran into my room and started screaming and cussing and threatening one of my students. All my kids had to evacuate the room for this, you know, intruder. And then this girl just stayed at school. Once she calmed down, the admin said, well, you know, she's calmed back down. She said sorry. So we're just going to, you know, let her go back to class. That was what really got under my skin, when there was no consequences. And then admin would wonder, why is the school so chaotic? Why do fights keep breaking out? Why do students keep running into Buck's room and interrupting his class when he's one of the few in control classrooms? It never dawned on them that the lack of consequences was facilitating, encouraging even misbehavior.
And again, I always have to wonder with this, do these administrators not have children of their own? Because most of the time, and again, parenting has changed quite a bit, but again, I still have fairly young kids. And I think that all of my kids are really smart. They are so smart that they can put together, if I or their dad says, stop it, and then they don't stop it, and we don't do anything, they're really smart. They figure out, oh, I don't really have to stop it. I can actually just keep doing this because this is what I want to do. There aren't consequences.
It's basic human nature. If there's no consequence to the behavior, then you're going to keep doing it. There's this progressive understanding of human nature that, you know, children are all beautiful and wonderful and perfect. Rousseau says there is no sin in the human heart. It's a paraphrase. We are born perfect, right? Man is born free and everywhere in chains.
Yes.
That's Rousseau actually quoted. But society corrupts us. So if little Jimmy is acting out, it's because he's hungry. It's because he doesn't get enough hugs at home. It's because there's a cultural clash between the school and his own personal culture. And those might be true. Those might foster and encourage misbehavior. But sometimes Jimmy might just push Timmy because he's, you know, 6 years old and needs a timeout.
Yep.
My daughter might run in the street because she just doesn't know any better. And if I give her a consequence and I tell her, don't run into the street, she's going to do it again because that's what toddlers do.
Yes.
And then I put her in a timeout. You know what she doesn't do anymore? She doesn't run into the street anymore. And you give them a small consequence now to prevent larger consequences. Or like when I watch children at Sunday school in the toddler room, some of the kids go over and hit other kids.
Oh, yeah.
Not because they're unloved at home, but because toddlers get angry and they don't know how to control that anger. And so they do what's natural to animals, honestly, and they resort to aggression to get their way. And they have to be taught and disciplined out of acting on that anger. And that involves timeouts, taking away toys. Yes, spanking. Oh my gosh, that's probably one of the most controversial things that I'm going to say.
Oh my goodness.
But we have to teach our children how to control their anger. We have to give them small consequences now to save them from better consequences. We need to teach them right for wrong, and discipline and consequences is a part of that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is something that I keep looking around and going, like you said, am I the only one who sees this? I mean, this in many ways, I will say, being in education policy, working in schools, you see complicated situations all the time. I understand, and I don't think it's, I think it's very clear. You're saying oftentimes there are very complex situations because humans are complex. It isn't always just one thing or another thing. There isn't one thing that will solve the problem, especially if kids aren't being taught behaviors at home, or I understand if kids are hungry, if they're not being fed a nutritious breakfast, they are going to be crabby because we are all humans and that's how we work. However, to completely advocate from the position that boundaries and rules give kids a sense of safety, that's how they know that their parents and their teachers care about them, is just absolutely ridiculous to me.
Students crave structure and predictability, and they walk in and they know where they sit and they know what's going to happen. it gives them a sense of safety, like you said, and it communicates to students, I love you. I expect more from you than what, honestly, society expects from you. If we don't discipline students, it's condescending. It communicates to them, I don't expect any better than you. You're never going to rise above your circumstances. You are going to fail, and that's just the way it is. And we pretty much expected this of you.
We expected you would fail, so we're not going to give you anything to strive for. And I loved a point that you made. I actually am going to quote you to you. Here, I'd love to just read for our listeners just a small part of this article from Don't Spare the Rod by Daniel Buck, because it hit me really hard. And it's not one of the most extreme examples that you've given, but you write, one morning, two female students entered my classroom dancing and chanting, googly, googly, googly. These girls had a record of insulting teachers, threatening a teacher physically, inciting arguments with other students, and refusing basic instructions, such as to sit in a seat. A few minutes into class, the meaning of their chant became clear. They were mocking the new girl for her googly eyes. Rarely do I call the office for backup. I prefer to handle misbehavior myself and impose my own consequences. This time, though, I radioed the administrators to escort the bullies out of my classroom. The serious looks on the faces of the other students told me they wanted the taunting to stop. And here's what I highlighted. And what message would it send to the new student if two classmates could harass her with impunity? And that has what has been lost from all of these arguments regarding restorative justice. And we can talk more about that. We really forget. What about the kids that are being made fun of? What about the kids that are being falsely accused of things? What about the kids that are being physically harassed at school? And then the next day, they have to face those same kids. And the adults in the room have done nothing to protect them. What message does that send to those kids?
The debates over discipline in schools almost exclusively focuses on the offender. This child, these girls, dancing into my room saying googly, 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 whatever, right? They don't have loving parents. They didn't learn from their home, their whatever it is, right? Always excusing their behavior or saying they have a right to their education. And it completely ignores, the debate completely ignores, the other 29 students in a room whose education is compromised because an administration, a system, a teacher allows misbehavior. We focus on the one to the detriment of the other 29, 25, 30, however big your class is. And it's such an injustice to all of those other students, not just their education, but, you know, in some cases, like you said, their physical safety, their emotional safety, I'm going to keep quoting C.S. Lewis. He says being bullied in grade school for him was worse than the trenches.
Oh, my gosh.
I did not fight in either world wars, so I cannot attest to the truth of that statement. But if we're going to abide kids bullying each other, cornering each other, physically abusing each other, it's just we're foregoing punishing one kid. And then the other kids actually are the ones who are suffering the consequences and the punishment in a roundabout way.
Yes. So basically we're rewarding the most obnoxious kids, the kids that, yes, they very well may have very difficult home lives. They very well may be fighting very difficult circumstances in their lives. But what are we reinforcing at school for them? School should be the one place where these kids, even if they are in really difficult circumstances. School should be a safe haven. School should be the place where even if the adults in their personal life are not teaching them how to behave, there should be at least one spot where they are seeing that modeled, even if that means they themselves are receiving consequences. But instead, we are encouraging this. And really, we are, as you said, we're ignoring human nature. human nature really is. I mean, we are all just about overgrown toddlers. That's pretty much it. Girls are mean. Boys are mean. We have to continually work on. That's why self-help books. I mean, how many self-help books are there in a bookstore on Amazon? There's thousands of them, because I do think that deep down we as humans know I need to fight my baser instincts. I need to strive to be better. So when we are not punishing someone for behavior that is inappropriate, we are setting them up to fail, and we're setting these other kids up to fail as well.
And I mean, as a Christian myself, I would say it all ties back to human sin, but we don't even have to explain it through religious language. It can be, the imperfections left behind by natural selection and evolution. It could be from a, you know, political science perspective. Just we have competing interests, and they are going to come in conflict when there is limited resources and scarcity. Human interests and different factions are going to conflict, and we have to restrain our own behavior. My right over my own hand ends when it interacts with somebody else's face. And yep. So we need limits on individuals to protect kind of our collective individual rights. And it's the same thing in the classroom. We can't allow one student to do whatever they want, because there are all 29 other students in that room who deserve an education too.
Dan, do you have any idea or any thoughts about why we've moved this direction as a schools in every state have moved into this restorative justice is sometimes what it's called model, where consequences really are non-existent and the focus is on the perpetrator, not on the victims. Do you have any thoughts on how we've gotten to that place?
I think our schools have lost sight of human nature as they have secularized. They have adopted this romantic Rousseauian vision of what it means to be human and where evil comes from, that it doesn't come from the child, but it comes from society's corruptions. And so it's actively unjust to punish a child, because it's not their fault they're misbehaving. It's somebody else's. Mm-hmm. I think it comes from weak, spineless administrators who don't want to deal with the controversy of, telling a parent that, well, your kid doesn't get to come back to school for a week because they're causing a problem. And it comes from kind of a woke social justice, the critical theory approach to education, which, as we discussed on our last show, maps this oppressed dichotomy onto the student-teacher relationship. So imposing any idea of right behavior or right and wrong or objective morality or ethics on a child is oppressive, and it's just a vestige of Western racism, sexism, all of those other isms.
And that, I mean, it just is. It's everywhere now. And one of the things that you kind of talk about in another article was that there's actually some good data. Some decent data on what happens to the classroom when those consequences are imposed. You talk a little bit in another article. It's in defense of suspensions. While I do think that you are really clear that there isn't a ton of super precise, you know, double blind, all of the things data, there's some good data showing that suspensions improved math scores for who? The non-suspended students. And I highlighted that going, again, we need to focus in on, like you said, the other 29 kids that are trying to behave. They are trying to follow the rules, which is very difficult. Let's, you know, pick middle school, for example. It's very difficult for a middle schooler, even a great kid with parents that are really trying to be intentional. It's hard for them to follow the rules. They've got hormones flying everywhere. They're trying to figure out their place in the world. They're uncomfortable in their own body just because they're growing quickly. Maybe their nose is bigger than their face. It's hard. It's hard to follow the rules, and especially when you've got someone in the class who's disobeying and not receiving consequences. But this study that you cited showed that, look, if those kids are suspended, if the kids that are causing problems are suspended, the scores for the other kids that are trying go up, which I thought was really interesting. Because there are a lot of thoughts about, should we exclude kids from the classroom? Should we suspend them? I'd love to know more of your thoughts on that.
So there's this great book written by John Hattie. He breaks down basically every factor that you can possibly have in a school and how much does it impact student learning. And one of the biggest detriments to, using test scores as a measure, but one of the biggest detriments to student learning is the presence of a disruptive student. And that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It's one of those conclusions that social scientists, research, and everyone else goes, well, duh. If a kid's misbehaving and you can't hear the teacher, duh, of course you're not going to learn an equation or who the heck Napoleon was and, you know, what the Napoleonic codes were. You're not going to learn those things if there's a kid making farting noises in the back of the room. Even if you can hear the teacher, that's still a distraction. You can only think about so many things at one time. And if you're thinking about the kids misbehaving in the back, you can't focus on the content in the front. The research into sort of some of these alternative approaches to discipline, PBIS, restorative justice, we don't have a lot of it. And they basically, it tends to find that they don't have much of an effect. The research that we do have is what happens when traditional discipline structures are broken down. So restorative justice, if you're going to have follow-up conversations with a kid, fine. That's fine with me. If a kid had an in-school suspension on my account, I always went and visited with him and had a, you know, heart-to-heart with him, gave him their work. PBIS is, you know, we're going to focus on the positive behavior. That's fine. I rewarded my kids who were behaving well. I gave, you know, opportunities for extra credit, or gave out, if a student gave like a bomb answer, I would give them like a handful of Starburst. Like, you might reward good behavior too. That's what PBIS is. The problem is, when you deconstruct the other behavior structures and you get rid of the consequences too, you see test scores fall. You see, it's counterintuitively, students spend more time out of school because they might not get suspended for, you know, talking back to the teacher. Behavior gets worse, so they end up getting suspended for fights or drugs, so they spend more time out of school. There's more serious incidences of misbehavior, is, you know, what the social scientists call it, and that just means fights, drugs, threats, those kinds of school things, weapon confiscation. So basically all of the metrics get worse when you get rid of consequences. That's the big thing. If you're going to supplement with restorative justice or PBIS, fine. I have no problem with that. The problem is when you get rid of the disincentive. Fine, bring in the incentive, but don't get rid of the disincentive.
That's really well put. And I think we're seeing that, I mean, not just within education. You can look at things like the Defund the Police movement that have been so very popular in our state of Minnesota and other states. And what we see is crime goes up. Now, I mean, the issue with education that I think you're talking about that sometimes policy people forget about is that you're dealing with a lot of very complicated situations, but we don't need to lose ourselves in the nuance to go past the point of common sense, which is we need rules. We need those rules to be enforced. Now, there could be more relationship building that tries to happen in addition to the rules. And again, you can even take this to, you know, more law and order type situations in cities. The police reaching out and forming relationships with people in the communities that they police. That's a great thing. But don't lose sight of the fact that we do need laws. We need things that are enforced regularly to give people some real safety and security. And when we don't have that, things start getting really crazy. And they start getting really crazy in the classroom as well. And I think that your articles do a really great job of delving into nuance and not trying to oversimplify things. I really appreciated some of the back and forth, you know, discussion on suspensions, because people do have different philosophies about, does it really benefit the student to just kick them out of class? But there's a lot of things that you have to think about in that situation, like, well, how does that affect the other 29 in the classroom who are trying to learn?
Yeah, and there are, like you said, there are very difficult cases, and I don't want to downplay that. What do you do with a six-year-old who didn't get breakfast and can't control themselves in class? Are we going to expel a kindergartner? Like, that's an ethically dubious situation. But on the flip side, you have people, there's an influential academic magazine that ran the headline, something like, to fix misbehavior, stop punishing students. You have this, you know, completely throwing out the baby with the bathwater, taking these edge difficult cases, and then saying, well, that's what are we going to do with this kindergartner who can't behave? We don't want to suspend or expel like the six-year-old. It's really not their fault. We want to, I mean, we still want to hold them accountable for the behavior, teach them right from wrong, all of those things, but take these edge cases and then thereby obliterate all consequences, obliterate all suspensions, expulsions because of the one or two difficult cases. And that's just, that's not going to serve our students. That's not going to serve our teachers. That's not going to serve our society writ large either.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a really great discussion. We're in just the last few minutes here together. I wanted to give you an opportunity. We didn't get a chance today to talk about the book that you've recently had published, but if you have just a few minutes to give us a brief overview and direct our listeners to where they could purchase that book and read more of your excellent writing, I'd absolutely love that.
Yeah, the book is called What is Wrong with Our Schools? And the basic thesis is that all of the policy debates about funding, even school choice, which I'm supportive of, or class size, miss one of the fundamental problems of our school, which is we have built up our curriculum and instruction and behavior structures and all the stuff that happens inside of schools on incorrect first principles about human nature, how people learn, what should they learn, these kinds of fundamental questions. So I open up kind of with a history of educational thought, lay out a few different theories of learning, and then show how it's actually traditional education that is what works best. So things that we kind of deride, like lectures, are actually a really effective way to teach students. Memorizing facts is essential for something like critical thinking. Consequences and discipline structures are essential for a well-run, ordered school. I think it's a lot of common sense, or at least would have been considered common sense, you know, 30 years ago, but we've kind of lost our way and we've bought into false ideas about what it means to learn and what's the purpose of learning and how do we learn. And yeah, you can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. Most people carry it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Daniel, for joining us today. And again, if you want to check out some of these articles that we've referenced, go to the Thomas B. Fordham Institute website and just look up Daniel Buck. Also, you can find him on Twitter at Mr. Daniel Buck. This is Abigail Johnson for Education America. Please give us a listen at 1280 AM The Patriot or catch our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts such as Spotify or iTunes. Have a good night, everybody.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.